This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
I'm David Plotz. During a recent trip to Chicago to record a live GabFest, Emily Bazelon and I set off to explore the city in a new 2015 Acura TLX. We headed toward the Chicago River. You'll find out why if you keep listening. I hope you enjoy our outing in the Windy City. Left down to the lakefront. We'll drive down the lakefront on Lakeshore Drive, and then we'll turn onto Wacker, and we'll drive along the Chicago River. So here's the thing that I love about Chicago is, first of all, I've been extraordinarily lucky because every time I've been to Chicago, the weather has been beautiful. And it's even beautiful today, even though it's cold. You know, the rap on Chicago is, oh, it's so unpleasant to be here because the weather is terrible. I always get beautiful weather, so I feel spoiled by that. But the other part is that there's something about the light, the width of the streets and the way the light hits the streets and just the kind of like the feng shui of the whole joint is so much better than any other city. I can't explain it. I'm sure that we need some great architect to explain why that is, but there's something about the way buildings are set back from the street, the width of the sidewalks, the kind of broadness of everything.
So you're talking about urban design and planning, and I wonder if there is actually something distinctive about Chicago is put together in that way.
Well, it is. I mean, because it had the luxury of having this great disaster in the late 19th century of a fire which burned down most of what was there at a time when, A, there was a huge amount of wealth being created here because it was this crossroads city, it was a hub, it was where the industrial parts of the country came together, the agricultural parts of the country shipped through. I mean, your husband, there's a great book, Natural Metropolis.
Nature's Metropolis,
which is why it is that Chicago becomes
the hub. That's not a book by my husband.
But
my husband's in that field. Bill Cronin.
Is a student of
Cronin. Yeah, I love that book. And so one of the things that book is about is all of the trade that took place here, right? So there's the pork trade comes here, and this becomes a major center for that industry. Also, grain. It was well situated for that.
So it has the luxury of, like, getting burned. Not luxury. It gets burned down at the moment when there's a lot of wealth and when there's huge innovation in architecture. And a lot of the innovation is coming from men in Chicago.
Well, I like the body of water in the middle of a city that is actually big enough that it feels like a vista and you can't just see it as a little trickle that you could jump across.
Right. Right. Do you like those cities on the ocean? I find it slightly daunting to be on the ocean. I always feel like, you know, it's because I hate the ocean, but that you know, there'll be a tsunami and that's it. We're all done for.
But it doesn't give you a sense of possibility to be able to look out on the horizon?
No. You know what? That's an interesting... The kind of port cities I like are the interior port city. So London I really like. London's a port city of a sort.
Well, it's on the Thames, but it's not on the Atlantic. Maybe that's what you like about it. Sort of has access to the ocean, but it's not exactly on the ocean.
Yeah. But if you like... what are the cities on oceans? Los Angeles.
I really like that.
Los Angeles is on the ocean.
Los Angeles.
I like
San Francisco's on
New
the
York.
Bay.
New York is good. New York has, you can, if you want to see the ocean, you can go to the ocean, but really what its main harbor is sort of an interior harbor.
Have you been to the High Line in New York yet?
I walked it yesterday.
Lovely. Isn't it so nice?
It's
Did
amazing.
You love it?
I've been there a bunch of times.
I haven't been there yet.
It is those things of nature in the middle of the city or city escapes are so great.
Yes, they really are. Well, it's because they're unexpected, right? And it's the juxtaposition.
There's this block by my house in Washington, which they closed the street. Many years ago, they closed the street. And when they closed the street, they didn't do anything. They just left it. It's a parkway that runs down into Rock Creek Park, and they closed it because there had been flooding on it. And for the past 20 years, this road has been seized back by nature. So it's this kind of cool, beautiful valley avenue, which is being overwhelmed by trees and by...
So it's being taken over.
It's being
like
taken over. It's
a
natural succession, yeah, which is so, so awesome.
I have a friend named Caitlin DeSylvie who's a geographer, and this is exactly what she studies. And a couple years ago, she did this great slideshow for Slate that was about urban decay. And her whole theory is that you don't necessarily freeze in any moment. Like the way that usually things are restored to look like their most famous moment in history, she's basically opposes that. And so what she's interested in is the transition itself and the way in which the objects that were part of that famous historical era are then transformed by like mold, decay, water, whatever it is. And that it's the actual crumbling itself that's really fascinating and beautiful. And there was this.
Yeah, I'm sure the real estate people love her.
Yeah, she's not someone who you necessarily would want to come and like take over your block. But if your block was already falling apart and you were okay with it becoming totally, a jungle around you, then she'd be an excellent consultant.
You know, it's funny because I went to Detroit this spring, and there's all these places which were glorious. And there is tremendous beauty in the way they fall apart. There's tremendous beauty, like as you look at it. There's no doubt there's something in the landscape when you look at it that is emotionally powerful. This is where we did our last live show. But you know, if you have to live in it, you want to live in something that looks like it's upkeep and isn't filled with mold and isn't falling apart. And you also want your neighbors' houses to be that way as well.
Yes, it's true that as soon as you're a property owner, you have a different. I know when paints are peeling and when the paint is peeling in houses on our block, I always get really grumpy about it and feel sort of this sense of outrage that if I saw it anywhere else, I would think it was sort of charming or not notice it at all. About the Chicago River. So it flowed into...
It flows into Lake Michigan, but at some point about a little more than a century ago, I think it's around 1903, what would happen is the people of Chicago who live up the river from the lake, so the water that they have is flowing towards the lake, they would dump their sewage into the river. So the sewage would flow into the river, and everybody downriver from them, plus everyone using the lake, is getting their raw sewage, right?
Uh-huh.
Their raw sewage
That's
is flowing
okay.
to the lake, and so that people can't, you know, the drinking water is pulled from Lake Michigan. The drinking water is contaminated with sewage. That's bad, right? So at first, the city of Chicago decides to just pull their drinking water from further out in the lake, and they tunnel deeply under the lake all the way out to two first 2 miles and 4 miles out just to pull the water from out there, because that will be the fresher, cleaner water. But even that water starts getting contaminated after time because this Chicago is growing like mad. And they come up with this idea, let's reverse the flow of the river. We'll dig it, we'll channel it out so that the water is flowing from the lake backwards. And we can, if we make a series of canals, we can ultimately shift this water that would be flowing into our lake, we can shift it so it flows into the Ohio River and then on down to the Mississippi.
Taking the sewage with it, sending it down to Mississippi.
Yes, and so what happens is they dig it out, and there's a great Supreme Court angle to this. I heard all this on Roman Mars's podcast,
They get sued.
The day before they're going to open the gates, St. Louis, the city of St. Louis, which is downstream from all the sewage that's coming at them, St. Louis files at the Supreme Court to try to stop it. And I don't remember exactly whether it is, it's just they open the floodgates anyway the next day and so it doesn't matter, or maybe they even filed the day after it had happened, but whatever it is if the water starts to flow, St. Louis is hosed. I don't know if the Supreme Court even ended up ruling. They may have been one of these things where they didn't ever rule. But I think what must have happened is that the water is flowing for so long, it's going through so much stuff, that by the time it gets to St. Louis, it's clean. Maybe if you live, 10 miles outside of Chicago, it's problematic, but that as you got further down, it wasn't. This podcast is brought to you by Acura and the all-new 2015 TLX luxury performance sedan. For decades, Acura has built performance sedans with unwavering purpose and passion. The all-new 2015 TLX represents more than the latest evolution. Rather, it's the clearest expression yet of Acura's performance philosophy. Its power and control brought into perfect balance. It's anticipating where the driver wants to go, changing the way wheels move and guide you. It's uncompromised design in the name of unrestrained feeling, putting exhilaration front and center once again. It's that kind of thrill. Check out the all-new 2015 TLX at Acura.com/TLX. Or, better yet, experience the thrill for yourself and take a test drive at your local Acura dealer.